next on the Social Hour, Amber and I are talking to Alexis Ohanian, co-founder of Reddit, author of a new book. He's going to tell us all about it, plus some other stories around the social web this week, including Twitter's trying to get your attention via DM, Instagram is auto-playing videos, and what do we think about social headphones? All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new WinApp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is the Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 132, recorded Friday, October 11th, 2013. This episode of the Social Hour is brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 1 million high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code SocialHour1013. And by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service and support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by Full Sail University. Full Sail offers both online and campus degree programs centered on real-world experience in the entertainment, media, and technology industries. For more information, visit fullsail.edu/socialhour. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It is episode 132, and I am sitting pretty in some kind of fall weather. I'm actually wearing a jacket today. It's starting to turn here in Twit World headquarters in Petaluma, California. Amber?
Well, I am in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, and it is a beautiful, sunny day. It is clear skies. It's Thanksgiving weekend here, Sarah. I don't know if you knew that, but we celebrate Thanksgiving. Monday is a holiday, so a lot of people are getting ready to cook turkeys. And my family is visiting from out of town, and life is good. It's a great Friday, and we have a great guest today. I'm very excited.
Yeah, we might as well bring him in because we've been having quite a bit of fun before the official show already started deciding who all of our spirit animals were. So you all get to enjoy the fruits of our labor. Alexis Ohanian, friend of the Social Hour, you've probably been on, three times before today. Welcome back.
I am very happy to be back. Thank you. You also convinced me to put on my swacket because it is beautiful fall weather here in New York. I can wear this thing that kind of looks like a sweater, but is really just a jacket.
Oh, swacket.
I've never heard that before.
It's better than a
I just
jetter.
Made it up. I don't know if this is. I am not fashionable. So I just made this up. And it keeps me warm. And I didn't realize California had seasons. So I'm glad you're enjoying fall.
Oh, very much so. Yes, it's getting a little nippy up in at least the northern part of the state this time of year. Swacket. I also have a couple of swackets that I wear a lot, Alexis. So now
yes.
I know what to call them.
Let's make
sweater
this a thing.
As a jacket. It's genius.
Yeah. Swacket.
It is genius. We should also mention, just because we have been tweeting about our spirit animals? Alexis, mm-hmm. You started this, so I thought you were joking, but all of a sudden we got into a pretty interesting conversation before the show about our spirit animals, and yours is pretty interesting.
I try not to take anything too seriously, but this is one of the brilliant insights that I put in the book, which is one of the ways I really like figuring out a person and their personality is by asking them this seemingly absurd question. And because it's not just what they say, but it's sort of what they're talking about when they describe or justify it. And so my spirit animal, the black bear, will hopefully remind you that brown bears are the ones that will eat your face. Black bears, I think, tend to prefer berries. And so if you encounter one in the wild, just get really big and sort of make loud noises, and it'll probably go along. It's the brown bears you want to play dead for, but they're generally pretty friendly. I mean, you don't want to cross a bear. Just don't try to wrestle one or something. It's a bad idea. But there we go.
That guy looks like he wants more than just berries.
Is that kind of no? He just wants berries. You see, you think right? Because like, look, I am. I don't walk on all fours, but I'm a lot of man, and I think that people who might see me be like they might think like, wow, this guy is he's a big dude. He might want to steal my picnic basket, but I don't. I never want to do that. I might bring over some cheese and wine to share with you on your picnic, but I will not steal your basket. Yes, I mean, how can you turn that down, right? Swack it, little wine and cheese.
It's good living. It's good living. There.
Well, Alexis, you mentioned your book,
looks like me.
But you haven't really talked about it. We don't even know. People watching might not even know you have a book. Let's talk about your new book.
I would love to. If I had more foresight, I would have had.
I have it. I have it, Alexis.
Yay! Yay! See? Oh, you got the Aaron's got the hookup. That's the limited edition.
I've read every single page, so I'll throw it over to you, though, to explain it. Because you know what? There's no title on the front of the book, which it always throws me off when I want to talk about it. And as you can see, there is one right here without their permission. So what is this all about? You can tell people and we can chat about it.
It is a little unconventional, but it is riffing off of this idea that we use in the internet industry that is permissionless innovation. And I always think about this great Grace Hopper quote. She was such an ultimate badass, and you've probably heard it before. But it's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. And her quote on this, to talk about permissionless innovation, is the thing that allows anyone with an internet connection and a computer to go and make something amazing, as being the driving force for creativity in the world today, especially online. Right? It's the thing that let me and Steve start Reddit with just laptops. It's the reason we have Facebook and Twitter and this podcast and so many great things online. And you know, I found myself having discussions with college students, nonprofits, even Fortune 500 CEOs saying the same thing, which is, look, the internet's sticking around. It's not a fad. And it is starting to change a lot of industries really drastically. And I want to hopefully, you know, using my own experiences with startups like Reddit and HipMonk, but then also the experiences of people I've gotten to know in other industries like film and music, philanthropy and activism, help a whole nother generation of people live up to their maximum potential of awesome thanks to the internet. And that's why I wrote the book.
Very cool. I also, a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about that you mentioned in the book. And Sarah, I think this is good for our audience because we have a lot of people who maybe do social media for personal reasons, or maybe they have a professional job where they do use social media. And the first thing I want to talk about, and you talk about this quite a bit in the book, but there's a little section on page 110, Love Thy Haters. And it seems to me in the book, one of your recommendations is to accept that there's criticism on the internet and you need to really embrace it and get past it and not get caught up in it. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, the way I chose to deal with it, whether it was online or whether it was in person, was to use it as motivation. And I would actually print it out and put it on my wall of negative reinforcement. And for years, you know, Reddit was always in the shadow of Dig. And so for years, I would be getting feedback emails and reading blog posts in various ways, criticizing us personally or the site. And I would put the best ones, or the worst ones, I guess, on the wall as motivation. And the best moment, the kind of crowning achievement on this wall, was when an executive at Yahoo, who shall remain nameless, invited us in for a meeting maybe like 5 months after we launched. It was still really early. And we'd actually just had a great meeting with Google. Then we go over to Yahoo and they invite us in and we get like 5 seconds into our pitch. And he asks, wait a minute, hold on. How much traffic do you guys have anyway? And Steve and I looked at each other. And we're like, well, we just launched. It's just a few thousand visitors. And he says, you guys are a rounding error compared to Yahoo. Like, why are you even here? And needless to say, the meeting did not go well after that. And we left shortly thereafter. But Steve and I were just like, man, this guy actually invited us here to make fun of us. But we went home back to Boston to our little apartment in Somerville. And I printed out and put it on the wall. You are a rounding error. And I kept this thing on my wall for years. Now my wall's gone. So I have a digital wall of negative reinforcement, but, you know, of course it is easier than ever to see criticism online. But you know, how we handle it is what will make all the difference. And everyone handles it differently. But for me, the way to do it was just to eat it up, like so, and use it as motivation for proving those people wrong.
What about the idea that, obviously, it's a great quote, asking for forgiveness rather than permission. And it's certainly, at its core, something that helps innovate because people think outside the box and that sort of thing. But what about situations where you see a lot of apologizing, particularly that happens via social media, for something that a business or a brand kind of should have known better about, and it ends up being a, ooh, whoops, yeah, that was a little bit of a faux pas on Nike's part, or the New York Comic Con recently had a snafu where they were tweeting out a bunch of stuff under members' names that weren't actually tweeted because they had some authentication hookups. What about that sort of thing where you feel like, well, you should have known better? How do you walk that line?
It is, I think it's largely it's a judgment call. Whether it's an organization or an individual, you have to be able to set some kind of standard for like what we are willing to do, because long term, that's going to pile up. You know, what the social media culture has done that is positive is if you do screw up, and Zappos is such an easy example because they do it so well, but like that's a megacorp that screwed up because some developer pushed some code. This is a couple years ago, and basically gave away a bunch of shoes, like millions of dollars of lost inventory, and they apologized and honored everyone's sales. I think you're allowed a certain number of apologies. There's no specific calculation, but if they are honest, if they are sincere, if they're like, if they actually go and solve the problem, if they actually take ownership of it and they are genuine, I think people actually respond really well to it. But yeah, there is, you know, you can only have so many, what, like Pop Chips commercials until people are like, really, Pop Chips? Like, I mean, that was a year or so ago with Ashton Kutcher, but like, it is, assuming we all are using our best judgment, I prefer to err on that side because that is where creativity happens. That's where interesting things happen. I think there are far too many people who would have great ideas and would have great contributions to bring to the world who just don't because they haven't gotten the sort of kick in the butt to go do it. And I'd rather see more of those people pushing those things forward than the snafus on the parts of companies or people who are doing it wrong and think that they can apologize later.
So let's say you do have a good idea. You've built something like you have many times. You've done lots of great companies. One section I really liked is this idea that once you've built it, everyone is the media. And it's interesting to see you talk that way because I think some people forget that. They think about traditional press releases and they forget that in this day and age with social media, the reality is anyone you meet could potentially be a partner, a user, whatever it might be. Can you talk about that concept that getting people to wrap their heads around this idea that it's all about traditional media when they're trying to promote their business?
Yeah. You know, I have fallen victim to this myself because I still, you know, I'm 30. So I remember seven o'clock news. I have a very, in a lot of ways, I still have a kind of very traditional mindset. And although I still have only written one, maybe two press releases in my life, I think the big hang up for a lot of incumbents is how much things actually have changed. And the great advantage we have as upstarts is that, you know, we can actually deliver a really authentic, really sincere, really passionate product. And if we make something people really want, it's easier than ever for them to share it. I mean, we saw this firsthand in 2010 when we launched Hipmunk. Like the response was immediate. And it wasn't just, oh, look, it's this thing Steve and Alexis and Adam are doing. It was like, oh, look, here's this thing. Like, we want to talk about it. The water cooler that always used to drive, you know, word of mouth is a cliche for a reason. The water cooler that always used to drive attention and excitement is just really big now. And it spreads really fast. And it's so important now. In fact, more important than ever that we focus on making good stuff. Because no amount of PR is going to save a crappy thing online. I mean, I ended up being an investor in Airtime, for instance. So here's some egg on my face there. Like, here is a company that had all of the spotlights on it, had a huge media launch, a bunch of celebrities, but they didn't make something people wanted. And no number of press releases, no number of reporters could fix that, could save that.
That was Sean Parker's big, it was, yeah. I mean, what was it marketed as? Sort of the chat roulette that works better type
yeah,
of thing?
Yeah, the chat roulette without penises.
Without the penises.
And it was going to eliminate loneliness was the little catchphrase. I ended up as an investor because I had invested in another company that was acquired by it that ended up forming a lot of the core technology. So, but there you go. Like that Hollywood style launch, for instance, that's one of the things I love about the internet is that even someone with all the expertise and all the resources and all the friends and all the connections and everything that he had, if you don't make something people want, like, oh, that doesn't matter. You know, there's a bottled water industry that exists today based on the perception that somehow New York tap water is not amazing. And it is amazing, by the way, and it's free. But like there are so many other industries where you can get away with sort of advertising and PRing your way to success. But the back button does not care on the internet, right? The back button is the enemy. And there are always cute cat photos just waiting to distract someone. And you've just got to be better than that.
One thing that I loved about your book, and I know you don't talk about yourself necessarily in this way, but you seem to have such a great sense of humor. And you mentioned off the top of the show about not necessarily taking things too seriously, yet I know that you hustle and work your tail off. Can you talk about how having that type of sense of humor and a lightness in terms of the way you approach things has helped you become successful?
You know, hey, Richie, do you think it's helpful that I am such a ridiculous clown? Like to work with.
Come on, Richie, be honest.
Yes. She says yes. Although he,
yes?
Although he's looking at me really skeptically, like, am I gonna get in trouble if I say the wrong thing? Until it's like deadline time.
Okay.
I think this is actually similar to the previous thing, like, I don't care how like funny or amusing it may be to work with me. Like if stuff doesn't actually get done, if you aren't actually doing stuff of value, again, it really doesn't matter. But at the end of the day, we also love, you know, we want to work with people we want to be around. That's why, you know, at early stage companies, so much of those early hiring decisions are so important. I mean, co-founder decisions, of course, but you know, when you're building something, you want to build a culture. I mean, again, I just name checked Tony twice now, but like Zappos was created because Tony realized he didn't like coming into work anymore at Link Exchange, I think it was. And he wanted to build a company with a really strong culture that he actually loved coming to every day. And you can see that. And I think great CEOs, great founders are really good at building that out. And yeah, I guess it has something to do with, you know, having a good laugh every now and then, but I think the best perspective I got as a young man was from knowing, yes, monocles and top hats. Everyone loves pigs. Actually, bread pig would probably be my other spirit animal. But the great insight that I was given, that I was lucky enough to get, was how unimportant most of the stuff that I do is, and that was just mostly from an illness in my family. And if I could imbue every person with an understanding of kind of how silly life is, really, and how all the stuff that we care so much about is actually pretty trivial, it would be, I think, a great gift. But I can't do that. I don't have those powers. I'm working on it. I'm working on some Professor X superpowers over here. But I think that's the best asset is to just at least have some perspective. I've heard if you go to Burning Man, you get that same perspective. I have not yet been to Burning Man.
No.
But maybe.
I don't think any of us can say that we've been to Burning Man. Amber, you haven't been,
really?
Have you? No.
No, I haven't.
Mm-mm.
I am shocked.
Wait, because we seem like such burners to you, you know?
No, I figured in tech, I feel like the outsider in tech most of the time, but especially when I confess that I've never been to Burning Man.
Well, you are in good company. We are all Burning Man virgins, I guess you would call us.
I am tripping acid right now.
Oh.
So it's kind of like a right.
Well, yeah. I mean, so you know how to do it. You've just never been to the desert.
You just didn't have to travel. It's so smart.
Yeah. Alexis, I think, you've got a book. you obviously have had your hands in so many different projects for a long time now. I mean, I would sort of say, you know, co-founder of Reddit, people go, oh yeah, Reddit, wow, that's a big deal. What are you doing day to day these days? I mean, are there certain projects that you're putting more stock in, or you know, what are you doing right now when the show's over, for example?
When the show's over, I am going to go down to General Assembly here in New York and host an event with Baratunde Thurston, who is an amazing entrepreneur himself.
Yeah, he's great.
I'm going to interview him.
That's great.
He's a good dude. And so right now, what am I doing? This is, you know, this is the start of a 150-stop book tour at 75 universities. So there's that. So I'm spreading the gospel about internet entrepreneurship. And then my show on The Verge comes back on October 15th called Small Empires. And that's a big love fest for New York tech and people who work there, as well as the people who use those platforms. So it's a lot of, I want to spend the next 3 months, no, sorry, 5 months on a bus going across this country, hustling for internet entrepreneurship and hopefully inspiring a whole other generation of awesome people to either start companies or start Etsy stores or launch Kickstarters or start podcasts or just like I said, live up to their maximum potential of awesome. And I feel like, especially for so many college students right now, things are or may seem economically rather bleak. But as you all know, the tech sector is one of the few that's still cruising that can't hire enough developers. I want there to be more developers. I want there to be more developers who don't necessarily look like me. And I also just want to see more people who are great be great at scale, right? Like every Etsy store that opens up that lets someone turn a hobby into a full-time job is a win. It's a success because it's someone who's doing their passion, who could be living in St. Louis and who is having so much success that they can now open a storefront in downtown. That's also not a hypothetical. That's a real story. Scarlett Garnett, shout out. But it's like these stores are so great because they couldn't have happened nearly as easily just 5 years ago. And, you know, social media has obviously had a lot to do with that, but all the platforms from Etsy to Kickstarter, it's just, it's an exciting time. And it's an exciting time for people who are doing stuff. And not enough of us are doing stuff because it's not part of the curriculum, right? There's no school that is doing anything other than getting, well, I shouldn't say that. There are not many curriculum, that are actually preparing people by doing stuff. Most of the time, we're just fearing failure, right? We're trying to pass tests and get to the next grade. And yet life is all about doing and sometimes failing. And like that dog in Adventure Time says, you know, sucking is the first step to being kind of good at something. And I want people to be really comfortable sucking at some stuff for a little while as they get better. I mean, you don't just pick up a microphone and start hosting an amazing interview show, but it gets better and better. And before long, like you've built an audience and a following. And I don't remember either of you ever asking for permission to do that. Or did you?
I don't think so.
Right.
Hopefully not. But, you know, I have to say, I love the book. And I don't want to say it's been a long time since I've sat down and read a book within just a couple of days, but I literally had it on my side table and I would pick it up every chance I got. For anyone who's in the internet world and who wants to start a business and is just waiting for it to happen, you should pick up the book and start it today because it is an awesome read. And I thought it was, your voice obviously was so present in that. I mean, obviously you wrote it, but sometimes you read stuff and it's really dry, but I felt like, you know, you were sitting right there reading to me. As creepy as that sounds.
I'm glad installing that spy microphone paid off because that's exactly what I was doing.
Awkward. I know you love Canadians, but that's one step too far.
Well, Alexis, it has been so fun having you on the show, and thanks for joining us. And withoutthepermission.com is where people can obviously find out more about the book and how to order. But what else is going on? How can people follow your trials and your tribulations so that they know about your talks at General Assembly and the like?
Well, I'm on the Twitters at Alexis Ohanian, which was down there. There it is. Boom. Thank you. And yeah, on withoutthepermission.com/tour dates, you can find all of the upcoming tour dates all across this country and Canada. So yay, we are heading up to Canada. Very excited. Okay. I'm actually going to University of Waterloo twice because that's how much they love internet entrepreneurship.
Yes, they do. Great city to go to.
Yes. So, yeah.
And you're coming to Toronto?
I am, University of Toronto.
Cool. That is awesome. Well, We'll make sure to put all of this in our show notes if anyone wants to check it out. And thanks so much for joining us. It was a blast, as always. Everything from spirit animals to starting your own business and what's in between.
Thank you so much. You guys are fabulous.
Thanks, Alexis. How are you? Enjoy your weekend. Say hi to Baratunde.
I will. I'll tell him to come back on Social Hour.
Sounds good. Thanks. Thank you. And enjoy your spirit animal, which has become the bread pig.
It's hard not to. They're delicious.
All right, Alexis. See you next time. Happy weekend. Quick reminder, by the way, that we record the Social Hour live on Fridays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. Our website is twit.tv/TSH. Amber mentioned. We'll put some of Alexis's links in our show notes. Each episode that we have has a bunch of show notes based on stories that we talk about, guests that we have, where to find them, where to email us. That's thesocialhour@twit.tv. All of that is in each of our episodes. So do make sure that you keep up on the show and all of our fabulous guests that we've had in the past. Amber, I guess it's time for us to take a little break and thank Shutterstock for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. You know, Shutterstock is great for photos and videos for a variety of creative projects that you might be putting together. You might be, you know, you're looking for just an awesome website. You just don't have that many of, royalty-free stock videos at your disposal. You kind of think like, well, I mean, I don't really know how to, you know, get a bunch of actors together and put something together that's conveying what I'm trying to get across as the point of my product or my service or sort of thing. You can choose from over 1 million stock video clips that are all very high quality. You got 2D, 3D, motion graphics, animation, variety of digital formats. Shutterstock is adding 12,000 video clips each week. So of that 1 million, I mean, they are growing their library exponentially. So every time you visit, you're going to find a lot of new stuff that you didn't see before. Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for bears, you got pandas, you got brown bears, you got polar bears, you got just cool bear. I mean, these are all, I mean, how are you going to get this video? It's not like you've got access to where these bears live in the wild. This is what Shutterstock is so good for. Shutterstock gives you the assets you need to bring these creative projects to a next level. People go, wow, this is awesome. Yeah, look. Oh, hey. Oh, that's cute. All right. Eyes on the prize, Sarah. Shutterstock has good tools as well, where I'm watching Brian search for incredibly cute little meerkat stuff. But what's neat is that you can search by a keyword or like a category. Maybe it's an animal category, or maybe you have to have a clip that's a particular resolution, or you want to search by somebody that you've noticed really contributes good stuff. That sort of thing. The search tools are very, very easy to use. And then you can also save them. So let's say you find a few things and it's like, you just kind of want to save them for later. Or maybe I want to show Amber, hey, Amber, I was thinking about putting together a new video open for our show, The Social Hour. And I just want you to look through a few of these, see if I'm on the right track. Amber can go into the clip box that I've added media to later at her leisure and then give me notes. So it's really good if you're collaborating. It's not just for a single person working on a project. If you want to try Shutterstock today, you can sign up for a free account. We're not going to get you locked into something where you need to add your credit card, nothing like that. You just start an account, start using Shutterstock, start clipping stuff to your clip box, find some really, really cool lizard videos like the baby chameleon that we're looking at. Some of you audio listeners, you really should, consider watching the video portion of the show because we've had all sorts of good stuff, visual stuff on the show so far. When you decide to purchase a plan at Shutterstock, let's say you're like, this is awesome. I want this all the time. Use the offer code SocialHour1013. So all one word, SocialHour1013. And new accounts will receive 25% off any package you choose at Shutterstock.com. And for 25% off new accounts, use the offer code SocialHour1013. And we thank Shutterstock for their support of the Social Hour. All right, Amber, what do you think we talk about? Well, a social tip.
Okay, so I have been looking for something like this for a long time. This is an app for Android users that allows you to record your screen. And now you may think, why would I ever want to do something like this? Well, the reality is maybe you've created an app or you have a website. You want to show someone how to use it and you want to post that on your site, whatever it might be. There are not that many great tools that allow you to do this, but this one is pretty awesome. It's called SCR Screen Recorder, and it allows you to record up to 3 minutes of video on your Android screen. Now, if you want to make sure there's no watermark, which most people will, you have to pay $4.99 for the pro version, but it's definitely worth it. And just a really simple app. If this is something that you may want to do, whether it's just something you need to do for business or something you want to do just to help someone figure and navigate their way around a certain app or a site.
Love this. It would work out so well for, yeah, instances where maybe you want to put together like a cool little screencast. And we all have that question where it's like, okay,
how do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, what do you do? It's easy to take a static screenshot. We're all pretty used to that on smartphones, but not necessarily a video that's just following along, you know, as some sort of a navigation or showing off how to perform a task.
Yeah, and traditionally I found, because I do use an Android device, that sometimes it can be difficult to figure out how to do things like this on an Android device. It's getting easier all the time, obviously, with screenshots and whatnot, but to record an actual video, it hasn't always been that easy to do. So this app looks really simple, really easy to use, and a great tool for anyone out there who wants to give it a whirl.
Love it. That is a great little tip. Well, should we move into our, this is a new one, Amber. This is one of yours, a social infographic. We love infographics on the Social Hour, but, you know.
I know. Mean,
maybe we love them enough to have their own segment.
Yeah, I know. I just keep adding segments here and there, Sarah, which is what I love about the show, is that we can always do that. I think we've had infographics before. We've had special features on an infographic that we thought was kind of cool. This one is interesting. I found it on Mashable. It's called The Most Popular Superheroes and Villains on Social Media. And it's a chart to give you a sense of who is the most popular. You'll see, and I'll explain this for our audio listeners, at the top, Batman comes in at number one versus the Joker. The Batman being 30%, 29% for the Joker as far as conversations, and all the other superheroes you could ever imagine are also included. And there's a map for most buzzed about in the world. So this is kind of cool to figure out in North America that Batman, the Joker, Superman, Catwoman, Spider-Man, I can't see who that last one is, but they're all the most popular, popular superheroes who are mentioned through social media.
That is, it is... Yeah, I kind of love this. I obviously, you know, comic geeks would probably have more opinions about this than me, because I'm like, oh, look, the Avengers beat the Justice League. Okay, whatever. but, you know, if you're a Marvel or a DC, you know, if you sway one way or another, you might be like, that's an outrage.
Oh, yes.
It's perfect. Infographics were made for these sorts of things because it makes that data visually interesting. And it puts a few things into perspective. I'm a Catwoman fan myself, Amber, not surprisingly, but I've never really thought much of Magneto.
No, I know. And you know what? It's interesting. I guess I would have thought that in all social media sites that Batman would be at the top of the list. But I would have thought maybe Superman was relatively close. Now, he's not too far behind. I guess he's at 23% compared to 30% with Batman. But, you know, interesting to see Batman tops the list. It seems pretty much all over the place.
You know, it used to be when we were kids, because, you know, you and I were watching the Christopher Reeve era Supermans at about the same age. Yeah, you know, we were little kids. I mean, it was like you couldn't top Superman. It was Superman. He was the top dog of all superheroes, because who can be cooler than Superman? And I definitely feel like we are in a Batman era right now.
Oh, we are.
Yeah. I mean, they keep making Superman movies, but we're all sort of like, meh. And then, you know, the Batman franchise has gotten really strong. And I know that's a little bit more of like a Hollywood thing, but yeah, I just feel like Batman is the one to beat these days.
Yes, I think you're right, Sarah. Batman seems to be going strong right now and is represented not just in the real world, but also through social media channels. So a fun infographic, if you want to check that out, we'll put a link on our site on Twit on the Social Hour page.
Absolutely. You know, I wanted to talk about a little spotlight here. Let me just make sure that I have my new Flickr app. I was using it on the iPad today, yesterday, but make sure that it's updated on my phone as well. Yes, it is. Okay, so this there's a new feature for iOS 7. The Flickr app has been updated. It is actually, this is a better demonstration on my iPhone because Flickr doesn't actually have a native iPad app, and I'm sorry that this is a very white screen, but there is a new feature for those who update the iOS app that you've got something called auto upload, and it's got this nice little pink new here. Now, it's off by default, but if I go ahead and say, well, what's going on there? What it is this is replicating a feature that many of you Google Plus users are already familiar with, where if you set it up to say, if I say, okay, I'm going to go ahead and turn on auto upload, that means that when I take a picture on my iPhone, it will automatically be uploaded via the cloud to my Yahoo account into a private folder. So I don't have to worry about people seeing something that I really, really didn't want to share publicly. Private folder with the 1 terabyte of free storage space that I, as a Flickr user, now get. That's sort of Yahoo's gift, which is, it's not unlimited, but that's still quite a bit of storage compared to what we used to get without having to pay anything. And I have to say, Amber, even though Flickr is not as widely used and is not quite so much the social media photo darling that it once was, at least in my circles, it's still a place that I use really seriously to back up photos. You know, anytime I send anything to Instagram, I always just go ahead and cross-post it to Flickr as well, because I feel like Flickr is just a great repository to have everything. But if I knew that I was always going to have a copy of whatever I was posting to Instagram already uploaded to Flickr into my private folder, that then I could go into and you know, I could go into and say, well, all right, I want to start making some changes and get into my settings and start putting stuff into sets and collections. That might make me want to use Flickr more often as the first place to post photos. What do you think?
I think it's really cool. I mean, I think as much as we preach about having to back up our photos, the reality is that most people don't do it. I'm not really that great at it either. So I think this is a great feature, especially the fact that it does go to a private folder. A lot of people will appreciate that because you don't want every photo out there through the social media world. So I think this is super cool. It makes perfect sense to me that they would do something like this, and I would use it. I mean, I think it makes it's something that's pretty useful, and I can't tell you how often I've taken photos on my phone and then maybe I've lost them, and that's kind of the only camera I'm using today, Sarah.
Yeah, same. Now, I'm trying to remember, does Facebook photo upload have the same features? Somebody in chat, if you know that offhand, let me know. Because I know that this is something that Google Plus introduced months ago.
Yeah, and, I remember that.
Yeah, and I remember my first reaction was like, yeah, I don't know if I want all of these photos that I haven't vetted for public consumption yet anywhere on any server anywhere. But I really, you know, just even if it's private, you just think, oh, gosh, you just need some little setting snafu, and, you know, not that I have, like, racy photos on my phone, but you know how it is. More unflattering than anything, right?
It's more like, just the bad photos, right?
Yeah,
it's the photos that you feel like, yeah, something's not right. Because how many pictures do you take to actually get that one that you want to share through social media? You probably take 4 or 5, and the rest of them I want to delete them forever.
Exactly. Yeah, they're just kind of taking up blah space more than anything. But I remember thinking, well, you know, maybe this is, you know, this is just, it's not really for me. And the reason that I like the Yahoo Flickr version of this is probably just because I have been a Flickr user and I still try to use the service as much as possible. And I'm not using Google Plus as a place to post the majority of my photos. But if you are, the services both work the same way. The idea is, yeah, you've got a backup. And then you'd be more inclined to use the service with, you know, all of your backup photos to start deciding which ones are good pictures. And you could put into, you know, a little folder or share with a particular circle and so on.
I love that. And I think I'm going to love this next spotlight, Sarah, that you dug up. I've not heard about this before. So all the news that fits in a 15-second segment.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting article over at All Things D. Peter Kafka wrote it. And this is, it's a nice little I don't know. I guess it's a little glimpse into what services like Vine and Instagram might actually mean for news and updates. So right now it's like, yeah, okay, I've talked about, you know, oh, there's a funny Vine here and there. Or we've talked about the fact that, okay, Instagram has introduced videos. Both Amber and I are like, well, you know, there's good things and bad things about that. It sort of, it seems to eat into a photo-only experience a little bit, but hey, people can be creative. There is an account on Instagram called Now This News. You may have heard of it, you may not, about 50,000 followers or so on Instagram, that is doing some really interesting things with the concept of short little news snippets in small doses. I'll actually play one for you now.
Libyan Prime Minister Ali Zidane is free after gunmen held him for several hours. Sounds like his captors were retaliating for America's arrest of Al-Qaeda suspect Abu Anas al-Libi in Tripoli. Local reports say military forces intervened to free Zidane.
All right, so you've got, it's a quick update. It's something that you would, you know, maybe hear at the top of the hour on your favorite, you know, 24-hour news program type of a thing. It's got some visual stuff. They've got a little brand identity at the end, and then they're done. It seems to be going over pretty well on Instagram. This particular video has, you know, something like 250 likes, a few comments. They're also experimenting with similar stuff on Vine.
Newtown, Connecticut overwhelmingly voted to tear down Sandy Hook Elementary to build a new school in its place. The residents of Newtown.
Now, Vine is a little weird because it loops. You know, you probably don't want to hear the same headline over and over and over. But Amber, since you and I both have worked in newsrooms and the concept of short snippets of news, we understand is really, really appealing to people who are trying to get through a bunch of stuff. Would you want to start consuming news in a way like this off of Twitter, let's say, and onto more of these visual services like Vine or Instagram, where you know that it's going to be pretty short?
I love this idea. I mean, I feel like I'm craving more news because everywhere I turn, even to news outlets, they're not necessarily talking about that much news. They're talking about things like Miley Cyrus, and there's just too much pop culture in the news these days. So I think it's neat to see it condensed into 15 seconds. And if they keep it sort of just to the facts, I think that's very cool. I also think, though, Sarah, we've talked about this many times before, it would be cool if there could be text on the screen as well, just in terms of kind of captioning what they're saying. For those times we've talked about lining up in a grocery store and you don't want to necessarily have your audio on, but you could kind of watch it and maybe read some text. I know that's more effort, but I think that could also be a useful feature if it's not part of it already.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that there are more and more, I'm starting to feel like, some of these services, my initial reaction was like, ugh, I don't like this. It's just too much noise, right? The video is just, you have to be so careful with video, right? When someone has gotten so used to a service that maybe wasn't video-based or, you know, I haven't ever spent much time on Vine because I find so much of that kind of loopy stuff irksome. But this new way of delivering news, and some of it's sort of ha-ha, some of it is obviously very serious, but the short snippet version of it and the fact that so many organizations and individuals seem to really like the idea of coming up with some sort of a message, having a point, being succinct about it, and then sending it off into social networks. And the fact that a lot of people seem to like this, too, because these accounts have a lot of followers and, you know, and comments and likes and, you know, at least people who are engaging, they're certainly looking at them, that I think, wow, I mean, what's the future of, would Instagram ever consider having, you know, some sort of like a news channel where you could say, all right, well, I've got all of my friend stuff, but now I actually want to use this as a news consumption tool. Why not? Possibilities are endless.
It would be great for bumpers, you know, in television, how they do little quick bumpers, like, you know, 10 seconds, maybe it could be 15 seconds long, but just something that comes up to break up the newscast if you're going to commercial. You know, I could see this even in translating back into the television world in some ways, but I like the idea. It's very succinct. I mean, it really depends on how you write it. And if you're a great writer and all of the content is jammed in there, I think it could be a cool little thing that even news organizations end up putting out just to get information out there really quickly in a different format.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like, you could say like us on Facebook, or it's like you have a small short version of, I mean, you and I could do little 15-second wrap ups of the social hour and start some sort of a, you know, either Instagram or Vine or some other account and post it wherever we want. And that goes for anybody, really. I mean, it's kind of a great promotional driver back to a longer form show as well.
Yep, I think it's cool.
Yeah, so we're in an age of experimentation. Even, you know, on this show, we're adding little snippets to our website now that tell people a little bit of, you know, walk people through some of our tips that we're sharing on each show and smaller versions of the show that show maybe a couple of what we think, you know, some of the best minutes of the show were to YouTube. So I think I don't think there's any real wrong way to go about this. It's all about seeing what sticks.
Yeah, I think experimenting and just coming up with different uses, and it's fun to watch that happen, right? And that's what I love about our jobs, is we get to kind of watch and see what sticks, what works, and what doesn't. So we'll see if this is around for a while.
Exactly. All right, let's take another quick break and thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. SAP makes social media solutions. What does that do? Well, I mean, the name kind of says it all. It helps companies use social media to improve their customer service and their support processes. These days, we know that everybody talks about brands, whether they're happy with the brand or they're mad with the brand. You want to be able to, if you're working for that enterprise, that brand, to be able to say, I am on top of what the public is saying about us. I want to improve our customer service. I want to be able to help somebody who has a technical support problem, who's tweeting and they're on a rampage because something didn't go wrong with maybe their checkout process, all of that stuff. You know, if you work at a large enterprise, it just becomes a challenge the bigger you get to stay on top of the conversation. Not only do you not want to ignore anybody, but you don't want to seem clueless. You want to seem like, all right, we've got a whole thing. We're ready for our customers. We're ready to help them out. We're ready to help them make a purchase. If they seem like they're on the fence, they might be ready to buy. There's a listening component of social media solutions, and that's all about getting all over the internet. Okay, well, what are people saying about our brands? What are people saying about our competitors? You can search for keywords or sentiment or that sort of stuff. All sorts of big data at play, really bringing stuff into your company. Then the engaging component is how you then interact with your customers. Make sure that the folks out there, somebody writes a review that you think, boy, you know, they could have had a better experience on this review site. You go ahead and follow up with them. And as we've seen many times, someone says, you know, I didn't have a very good experience, but I had such a nice person who contacted me and tried to make the situation better at this company that now I ended up being a pretty happy customer and everybody wins. The engaging component will help you improve customer service and support because you can also set rules about who's taking care of what. You've got tech support questions. You've got a customer who might be confused about something. You've got more than one person on your team. Everybody's kind of got to divvy up some of the work here. So those are the sorts of rules that you can set for people. Jack over here works on tech support. Laura over here does this. If somebody tweets some sort of a problem, you just get it to the right person. It's all designed to make you look like there's a lot more people working behind the scenes than there actually are, because you've got SAP on the case. Social media solutions from SAP gives you more than marketing. It's definitely more than marketing because it improves the customer service and the support experience. If you're interested, working at a large enterprise, know somebody who is, and you hear us talking about SAP and you think, this seems pretty great, go to sap.com/twit. Take a guided tour, see for yourself how social media solutions from SAP will work for you. Pour vous. Mm-hmm. All right, Amber, let's move on now to, we kind of did the show a little bit backwards today, but hey, why not? We've got some stories that we might as well get to before we get to your rad or fad, which is how we always decide to end the show. The first story is it's not one particular account on Twitter. It's actually a few. And this is the idea that Twitter seems to be experimenting with a variety of accounts that are designed to personalize notifications for you. And by that, I mean there is an account that's an official Twitter account. It's verified and everything, called Magic Rex, like M-A-G-I-C-R-E-C-S. Now, the idea of that is if I go ahead and follow Magic Rex, then let's say you, Amber, and a variety of other people at Twit all hear about this really great news account, or maybe it's a parody account or something that's getting a lot of buzz. And enough of the people that I follow end up following this account in a short amount of time, I would get a DM from Magic Rex saying, heads up, Sarah, this particular account, Historical Picks, or, you know, that was an account that got a lot of buzz recently. This probably should be on your radar because it's getting a lot of attention on Twitter. With the DM aspect of it is, this is not something that's part of my stream, so it doesn't really affect my Twitter experience as it is. It just adds a little something into the DM field. Now, we were talking about this on TNT yesterday, and Tom made a good point where he's like, you know, Twitter's really been trying to de-emphasize DMs, it seems like. Every time they come out with a new design, the DM seems to be a little bit more buried in the web version of Twitter. So what do you think about the idea that we could get more personalization, that we'd be delivered to us in a way that nobody else would see?
You know, it's interesting because one of the things that I love about Twitter right now is that, for instance, I have not received a direct message in the past 24 hours. So it is one of the few inboxes that I have that isn't cluttered with a bunch of different messages. And I kind of like that. I feel like when I actually get a DM, usually it's something important, something quick I need to respond to. So I'm not sure that I would use it all the time in the sense that it would feel a little bit, I don't want to say spammy, but maybe it could be too much. Mm-hmm. Now, if it's breaking news or something like that, I do kind of like that idea. But then, you know, there's always that balance. How far do you go? How many notifications are there? And to me, it just feels like, okay, my direct messages are relatively sparse right now. And I sort of enjoy that part of Twitter, you know? Maybe they could just tweet it to me and it would be better than going into my direct messages.
Yeah, I think some people like me get kind of excited when I get a DM because I figure when somebody sends me a DM, it really is just for me. You know, it's maybe they need my address because they want to send me something in the mail. That happened to me the other day because a friend of mine wrote a book. She wants to send me a, you know, physical copy. But it's like, or you know, maybe it's something that maybe wouldn't be appropriate for public consumption because you might be talking about a third party or, you know, that sort of thing where I say, ooh, damn. You know, so I have push notifications turned on just for DMs for Twitter, not really for anything else, just because I want to know when someone's trying to get a hold of me. And in many cases, I just have friends where DM is kind of like our text. We don't even necessarily have each other's phone numbers, but it's a way to have that private channel. So I agree with you that if there was too much of this going on in the private channel, well, then the private channel becomes something that feels a lot more like email, where it's a chore and not some fun thing when you hear from somebody. But you know, it's kind of interesting.
It is interesting. I mean, it's nice to see them experiment and come up with new ways that we can personalize our content, but at the end of the day, most of the stuff that they're talking about, I wouldn't care if it was public and just kind of tweeted at me. That would almost be better to see it as a reply than get into that inbox territory, which I think Twitter has done a great job of ensuring that most of the messages in there are just like you said, Sarah, they're kind of one-on-one conversations and there's not that many of them for most people. And it's the one place you can feel like, oh my gosh, I'm not overwhelmed with having to respond to all of these. So, you know, I like that part of Twitter a lot. Now, you know, Sarah, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, Gardner in chat says, you know, Magic Rex doesn't really send a lot of DMs. And I think that that's also kind of interesting because I went ahead and followed Magic Rex because I just wanted to get an idea of what was going on. And then I decided to unfollow because I was like, you know, the recommendations that I'm getting for the most part, I can kind of figure out on my own because there's enough chatter about a cool new social media account that I should follow in my regular Twitter stream.
Yeah.
In fact, I have a couple of friends who they really take it upon themselves to be like, attention, everybody, this is the new funny account that you got to follow this week type of a thing. So I thought, well, I feel like I'm just getting DMs about stuff I already know about. And I think that that's probably it just depends on the person. Some of you might say, nobody ever does that for me. I need something like this. So, again, it's sort of up to you. And it's nice to see that Twitter's experimenting.
Yeah, exactly. I totally agree with that. Now, speaking of experimenting, we really haven't had that much Facebook news over the past few months where we talked about how Facebook was potentially hurting you in the privacy area. But this one has a lot of people up in arms. I know I saw a lot of people tweeting about this. Facebook removing the option to be unsearchable by name within the Facebook platform. So, Sarah, what do you think of this, that they've decided to almost take a step backwards?
Yeah, so the idea is that if you, for whatever reason, say, okay, well, I've got people that I just don't want to be able to find me on Facebook, but I want to have a presence on Facebook, I should be able to just basically be scrubbed from their version of Facebook. Facebook is now removing this privacy setting to be able to keep people that you've blocked from looking up your timeline by your name. Now you might say, that's crazy. Why would you do something like that? And Facebook is basically saying, and you know, I'm paraphrasing their steps on this, but saying, we already have these privacy settings that are a lot more specific. I mean, we've taken the privacy settings and drilled down so many different levels of privacy settings that you actually have these capabilities already. And many of you think that because you've blocked somebody that they can't find you, but it's actually possible to get to you via other channels. You know, maybe you're tagged in a photo, you know, you're part of a group, and you actually want even more privacy than that. We're kind of helping you out by getting rid of this option. What always worries me about stories like this is that there are so many people who don't pay a lot of attention to privacy changes. So if somebody's like, hey, I'm really concerned that this person that had harassed me in the past, I want to make 100% sure that they're not able to find me and they're not aware of this privacy setting and something happens. That's not a good thing. Although I guess at the same time, if you're so worried about privacy in that particular setting, one would think you'd pay a lot of attention to privacy changes on Facebook's part.
Yeah, I think they've always made it sort of complicated. And I think so often by default, they end up really, they can potentially hurt you in the privacy area. So I think, I don't know, it doesn't seem like the smartest move in the world for them to go out and do this. But I think we all just have to pay more attention, like you said. Now, Sarah, speaking of paying more attention, this is an interesting bit of news that I did not see this, but Instagram no longer letting users disable video audio autoplay, a small but important step towards ads. This is an interesting headline. We've talked a lot about Instagram ads in the past.
Yeah, so, and this is, I mean, we talked about this, it seems like just yesterday, I guess it was a week ago. The idea that at least on Instagram with ads, or with videos rather, see, I'm already getting them mixed up, with videos, you could disable autoplay by default. So if you saw that something, you know, you're scrolling through and I'm like, okay, I've got like, you know, just a couple minutes before the light changes green, or, you know, it's sometimes it just videos just aren't part of my process, then at least they weren't going to play on their own. Well, Instagram is disabling that option so that you can scroll past a video. It's not like you're forced to watch it, but it will start playing without you explicitly saying yes, a forward arrow. Now, of course, this is all not, it's not only because of ads, but this is, it's designed to get us used to all of this so that we don't end up having ads on Instagram that nobody ever clicks on and so nobody ever sees. These ads will start playing without any push work on our part, which is, I think, you know, potentially annoying, but I don't really see how it would be worth an advertiser's effort to have an ad that they put work into just to have somebody scroll past and never see anything.
Yeah, I think it could get annoying. I'm definitely with you on that. I think it could be a little bit frustrating, but from the advertiser's perspective, this is obviously a good thing. But from a user's perspective, I don't know. It just seems like I think a lot of people could be frustrated with this. I'm curious in the comments, actually, if there's only three comments on this particular article, but just curious what people are saying so far, because I think it could be one of those things. Not that Instagram is under threat in terms of not being popular anymore, but it could irritate a lot of people.
Yeah, I think autoplay, many of us just have, a bad taste in our mouth about just autoplay anything, because we think about, you know, those ads that are autoplaying in browser tabs where it's like, what is that?
I hate that.
It's one of the most annoying things. You just think, even if it's somewhat effective, it's just everyone is so upset with you all the time. And this feels a little bit like that. But at the same time, it's like, man, on a mobile interface, you've got to grab people some way. So I almost can't fault the people at Instagram, the people at Facebook, really, who say, well, let's give this a go and see if there's enough public outcry. And then maybe we can, you know, pull in Alexis and ask forgiveness and revert back to, you know, the old days. But it does seem like ads are going to happen, and the Instagram that we know and love is going to change.
So. Yeah, I'm with you, though. Autoplay is such a dirty word in the internet world and the tech world. I absolutely hate anything that autoplays. I know there's a couple of news sites that I visit where they always have videos autoplaying, and it drives me insane. And for that reason, I'll never watch any of them. So I think there's no case where I think autoplay is really a good idea. I think that would be my final stance on that.
Yeah. Indeed. So, speaking of upsetting, what is the story about the Brooklyn tweeter who was attacked?
Okay, so I say attacked because he was attacked online, so don't worry, there's nothing violent that happened. But in Canada, we have a bunch of big wireless companies. One of them is called Rogers. And 2 days ago, there was a cellular outage across the country. So you can imagine millions and millions of users who lost service to their cell phones, which is a big deal, Sarah. As you know, many people are cutting their landlines and just depending on their cell service for emergencies or getting in touch with loved ones. And for there to be an outage that happened for hours, it was a massive pain in the butt. So people, of course, went to Twitter. That was the first place they complained. And there was this random guy who lives in Brooklyn, and he happens to have the Twitter account at Rogers, which is the name of the cellular company. So if you look through his recent feed from, I guess it was Wednesday night, you can imagine he makes jokes about being verbally abused by hundreds of Canadians. He says he's grabbing the popcorn and, you know, just sitting around as it's coming in over and over again. A few different stories about this, but it's a case of just having the wrong name at the wrong time. And it's kind of funny, obviously nothing too terrible here, but you can see how people lash out so quickly and they don't even go to check to see if they have the proper brand or company name in their tweets when they're getting angry at some poor guy who's just hanging out in Brooklyn trying to enjoy his night.
Oh, man. Man, I mean, I kind of have to laugh because, yeah, I mean, he knows what's going on, and he obviously understands that he has absolutely no control over the actual legitimate Rogers situation happening in Canada. But imagine, you know, it's funny you say that a lot of people aren't even bothering to go to the profile. It's like, I think that there are just enough people still that are still confused because
obviously
It's Twitter, and Twitter can be a confusing place to people, especially. And then he starts getting apologies from people who say, oh, I realize what I did. People saying, you know, cause imagine if you are livid, with a company like Rogers, you go to the profile that you think is the company profile, and then you see a tweet saying, like, okay, here comes the Rogers hate, grabs popcorn. Then you'd be like, they're mocking me.
But, I know.
Case of mistaken identity. This happens all the time, though.
It does.
It's a blessing and a curse to have a cool Twitter name like that.
Yeah. We've talked about this before on the show. I think you have a friend. I don't know who it is. But you mentioned
a few friends, but one of my friends, Ryan Block, who was a founder of GDGT and now is part of AOL, his Twitter handle is at Ryan. Well, Ryan, R-Y-A-N, is a very popular name, particularly for men. But, I mean, that's just, there are a lot of Ryans out there. And he says he's most of the time, depending on, you know, what part of the American Idol season we're in, he starts getting tons of tweets that are obviously bound for Ryan Seacrest. And people just put spaces between Ryan and Seacrest because, again, Twitter's confusing to people sometimes, especially people who might not necessarily spend a lot of time on Twitter but want to talk about American Idol specifically. And so, yeah, you've got these issues all the time. I had my little ballerina snafu a few years ago
Oh, I remember
people
that.
People wanted to talk about the ballerina that if you don't know what I'm talking about, there's a woman named Sarah Lane who's a ballerina who was a stunt double in the movie Black Swan. And there was some, you know, there's some, I don't know, outrage over that. And so, yeah, I was getting people who were saying, like, stop complaining, you stupid ballerina. They were talking to me. And it took me a while to figure out, oh, they're just not realizing that that's not me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd love to be able to be, you know, a prima ballerina, but I assure you, she is someone else.
Sure, Sarah, sure.
So what about you? Amber Mack, I can't imagine that that's really anything people get wrong too much.
No, I don't seem to have any problems with it too much. But, you know, it's funny because originally on Twitter, if you did get just one word as your name, so you'd be excited if I got at Amber, you would think, oh, this is the coolest thing in the world. But I can see how it can become a nuisance as more and more people tend to just think that they can do at anyone and it's going to go to the right person if just it's just a simple name. So I'm kind of glad I have something unique. And, you know, Sarah Lane is relatively unique, too. Except for that one ballerina.
Except for the one ballerina. Yeah, thank yes. goodness. If I was at Sarah, I think that would be a whole nother. Because like one out of five people on Earth is named Sarah. So I'm happy to have the moniker that I have. Hey, we love hearing from all of you. We love you passing along stories like this to us, stuff that you want us to cover on the show, little tips that you might have, variety of ways you can get a hold of us. TheSocialHour@twit.tv is our email address, which is sort of held hostage right now because Radford, our IT wizard, is on vacation. But hopefully everything that you've sent is going into the ether somewhere and will be unlocked next week. But do email us. I don't know what's wrong with we've got some sort of a ghost in the machine here at Twit. Leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. That's 2626, SOCIAL, if you'd like to leave us a voice message. Try to keep it to 30 seconds or less. Or if you think there's a video that either you want to put together or you want to show off something or just pass along something that you found online, do that. Send us the link, and we'd love to feature it in a future episode of The Social Hour. All right, Amber, before we get to your rad or fad, we'll take a last little break and thank Full Sail for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. This is actually, it's perfect for so many people who watch and listen to the show. Many of you say, well, I really want to get into, you know, some sort of a career that's maybe along the lines of what you and Amber are doing, or, you know, the social media realm, or post-production. If you're looking to begin a career in journalism, or maybe you already have a career in journalism, but you feel like, gosh, I need some more digital media skills. I've got kind of old school skills. Maybe it's been a long time since you've been in any sort of a class where you were getting new skills, working towards a new degree that was current and made you feel like you were up to date on the technology and the programs that you'd need to make some sort of a move in your career. You may be very interested indeed in Full Sail University's new online new media journalism master's, because as a student, you'll get familiarized with the tools and techniques you'll need for good storytelling to reach a wider audience online. I mean, that's a number one concern of a lot of people is, hey, you might be really creative, but you don't really know how to use your online skills to make sure that you're reaching as many people as possible. This program will prepare you as a graduate for a variety of roles, communications and media, journalism, photojournalism, blogging. Maybe you just feel like, I never really got the hang of how do people do that so well? Marketing, writing. I mean, some of this stuff I feel like, well, I know a lot about blogging, but I certainly don't know a lot about marketing. Project-oriented coursework also that is taught by professionals, people who work in the industry, have lived in this industry, know what they're talking about, ensure that you have very good schooling there. Full Sail University's online and campus degree programs are all centered on real-world education. This is stuff that you actually need day-to-day, an experience with industry, technology, and workflow. Best of all, this will really appeal to a lot of you because you don't want to spend a ton of time going back to school. You can get your master's degree in 12 months. Lots of master's degree, right? I talked about the new media journalism degree, but you could go public relations, internet marketing, business intelligence, entrepreneurship. The list goes on. To learn more about Full Sail's master degree program in new media journalism, or any of their bachelor's or their master's degree programs, you can check out fullsail.edu/social hour. I'll say that again, fullsail.edu/social hour. And we thank Full Sail University for their support of the Social Hour. And if you have some stories about good classes that you've taken, we'd love to hear about that too. Let us pass along the good information to everybody else. All right, Amber, what is our Radar Fad this week?
Okay, so Sarah, I don't know if you've ever heard of this idea before, but what about a pair of socially smart headphones? These are from a company called Muzik. There's an app that goes along with them, but there also is some functionality built in to the cable that allows you to do a bunch of different things, such as share the music you're listening to on Facebook, share to Twitter. You can sync up through the app with services out there like iTunes to get all your music from iTunes or Ardio. You can also use Siri or voice control through the headphones. And generally speaking, probably the most social headphones that I've seen out there. Would you use these, Sarah?
I don't know. I don't know. I like the idea of, especially because, you know, these headphones, we're looking at a little video here that shows them off. They're larger. These are, you know,
not cheap either.
No, right. It's a little bit of a, you know, it's the quality is probably pretty good, but they're a little bit of a fashion statement as well. Mm-hmm. So you figure, well, if I'm going to go ahead and wear something that's more of a substantial headphone set on my head, it's kind of cool that they do other stuff. I'm not sure how much of a need I would have on a day-to-day basis, but maybe that's just because I don't have a pair yet.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool. My only problem is that I tend to break headphones on a regular basis. So I love having great headphones. The reality is I've probably broken two pairs of headphones that I've received in the past year. And so I worry a little bit about them doing even more because I would definitely break some part of it. But I do think it's interesting. I think it's neat that the concept of kind of linking up to some of the music streaming services that you probably use already, mm-hmm. and then building almost like a sharing community within the app in terms of people who use their products. So I don't know. I'm kind of on the fence with this one, Sarah. I don't know. Is it rad or is it a fad?
I think this, it really plays into the whole, you know, smartwatch type thing.
Yes.
It's if you are, I mean, I do a lot of walking, and most of the time, I mean, 90% of the time, unless I'm walking with somebody else and I'm talking to them, I've got my headphones in because mm-hmm. I like listening to music or podcasts or whatever. So it's like, the headphones are always something that are in whatever, you know, handbag or purse I've got with me, always. So that already kind of is speaking to me because I wouldn't have to think about, oh, yeah, I've got to have my headphones in order to be able to post socially to Twitter or to hook up to my Ardio account or that sort of thing, because I've got the headphones with me. Of course, they're not these specific headphones, but they could be. Mm-hmm. As long as I have headphones, I think I'd be happy. The app looks nice, you know, the interface. So maybe this appeals to people who are like, yeah, I like the idea of having something that's wearable technology that has social elements, but they don't really like the idea of adding some sort of an armband or something that they're, you know, clipping onto their clothes or that sort of thing.
Yeah, and these are really new. As far as I can tell from the site, they're available now sometime in October. They're just allowing you to pre-order, but I don't think you can get them in stores just yet. So maybe I'll contact the company and see if we can get a pair to try. They could send you a pair, Sarah, and give them a whirl. Because I think it's worth exploring because I'm not totally one way or the other. If we can just put a hold on this Radar Fad, that's probably a good idea.
Okay. Are we going to do our first official Radar Fad suspend judgment?
Yes.
Okay.
I think we should.
I think so too. Especially because these headphones could be awesome in every way, but like really uncomfortable. I think that they actually look pretty nice. I mean, they're not cheap. They're definitely not cheap. But they do come in white or black. And yeah, this is something that I think we probably have to do some real world testing and then decide if we really like that that social button or not. So.
It's tough, right? With headphones, I mean, you really need to try them on. You really need to hear the sound quality. There's so many other factors that we just can't necessarily decide on just yet. So leave this on hold and we'll get back to this.
Yeah. Smart social headphones. We're not sure yet. rad or fad. We'll come back to
it. Let us know what you think. If anyone has an opinion who's listening or watching.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well, Amber, we have come to the end of our hour. In fact, we gave you a little hour plus. Well, we had Alexis at the beginning of the show.
So much fun.
I know. He's just... You never know what you're going to get with wacky Alexis. So we went over our hour, but I think it was well worth it. Remember that we do record the show live. If you'd like to follow us and be part of our chat and be tweeting us and have us look at it while we're doing the show, we record it on Fridays, 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific. And, of course, our website is twit.tv/TSH. That's where you can get all of the links to watch the show on demand at your leisure. You go ahead and subscribe to the show, and then you can watch it whenever you want. It'll just sort of download for you each week, audio versions of the show as well. Sometimes you miss a thing or two, but in general, look at us last week, Amber, with our side part. I didn't even notice that until right now, that we kind of were mirroring each other.
We were.
Yeah. Interesting.
Mirror images.
Yeah, mirror images. But all the good stuff that you would need on each show is in our episode pages. Links that we talk about, rad or fads, subscribe links, the video itself. Everything is in our show notes at twit.tv/TSH. Amber, I would normally say, hey, you have anything fun going on between now and next Friday when I see you again? But you've got Turkey. Canadian Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I'm super excited. So on Sunday, we'll be having Thanksgiving dinner like many other Canadians. And I'm here. My whole family's here. They're upstairs right now. They're making a lot of noise. I told them to be as quiet as possible. But I think at 5:30, they've decided that it's time to come up. So, it's an exciting weekend. I love Thanksgiving, Sarah. So it's going to be some good chill time.
Well, I hope you guys have the best dinner ever. And I would say I'm jealous, but we'll have Thanksgiving soon enough next month. So it's kind of like, I feel like our holidays are officially kicking off. Thank you, Canada.
It's true. It's true.
All right, everybody. Well, thanks for watching and listening. Amber and I will be back same time next week. In the meantime, have a wonderful week. And we'll see you on the internets.
We'll see you soon. Thanks for watching.